Bella Kenwood to Grantham, Pittston to St. Mary's. This is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Exelon has announced it will close the Three Mile Island nuclear plant near Harrisburg. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capital Watch discussion on why free market competition forced the closure. And State Representative Brian Sims videoed himself verbally harassing a woman who was peacefully protesting outside of a Philadelphia abortion clinic. I'll have a town hall commentary on the rage and intolerance of the left. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Voters in Pennsylvania's sprawling 12th Congressional District, centered around Williamsport in Lycoming County, will vote in a special election to fill the congressional seat left vacant by the January resignation of former Congressman Tom Marino. That election will be in the spotlight on Monday as President Trump visits Montoursville to campaign for the Republican nominee, State Representative Fred Keller. Trump won the district by 36 points in 2016. It is viewed as a reliably safe Republican seat. Unlike other special elections across the country, this contest has drawn little national attention. But the president wants to secure the seat while also building support for his reelection bid next year. Joe Scarnati, president pro tempore of the Pennsylvania State Senate, wants to put the lieutenant governor's residence at Fort Indiantown Gap up for sale. Current Democrat Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman has refused to live in the sprawling residence, preferring instead to rent an apartment a few blocks from the Capitol in Harrisburg. Scarnati wants to designate proceeds from the sale to help fund housing for military veterans. Staff and maintenance costs for the residence have run about $400,000 per year in recent years. State Representative Aaron Bernstein of Lawrence County wants to repeal Pennsylvania's gun concealed carry law. The law requires gun owners to register with their county sheriff if they want to hide a weapon while carrying. Bernstein says those who have already passed a background check and are clear to own a gun should not have to take that extra step. He points out 13 other states do not require such permits to carry a concealed weapon. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. After failing to secure a taxpayer-funded bailout, Exelon has announced it will close the crippled Three Mile Island nuclear plant. The closure comes as the nuclear power industry struggles to remain competitive with natural gas and other cheaper sources of electricity. Our Capital Watch crew is here to talk about why the closure is an example of free market forces operating as they should. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and by Stephen Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, the Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks so much for being on the program.
Happy to be here again, David. Thank you.
And our pal, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation, Pennsylvania's free market think tank. Steve, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. Always a joy to be here.
So, you guys have probably heard me rant before. One of the things that really bugs me is they're all different kinds of bias, all different kinds of viewpoints. But the one thing that really bothers me somehow is this bias that the world started this morning. You know, it's like we all need to understand like where we came from, how we got to where we are now. If we're going to move forward, like learning from what's been tried before, what's worked, what hasn't worked. And so this brings me to one of the recurring themes the listeners have heard on the show, an update on Pennsylvania's competitive markets for electricity. So this was a long time in coming. This was put in place actually during the Ridge administration, and so we just had the 20th anniversary of the program going into effect, and that competitive markets have worked for Pennsylvania consumers. It's driven down costs across the board, and that everyone benefits, from the largest industrial consumers to, you know, to small businesses and individuals. And so this is why this whole bailout thing really bugs me, because this is something that the parties agreed to, you know? I mean, aren't people supposed to keep their word?
Competition. And you look at we're talking about the electric grid and the power markets in Pennsylvania, but think of other examples. The trucking industry used to be heavily regulated by the government. Prices were higher. The quality of service was lower. The timeliness factor was nothing like what it is today. When it was deregulated and became a competitive industry, consumers were the winners. Products are shipped more efficiently. The prices are lower across the board. The quality is better. We see it with that. We all, at least some of us, are old enough to remember when the telephone markets were regulated.
Yes, indeed.
And there was one kind of telephone, and it was attached to a wire, and it weighed about 20 pounds.
Yes.
And when those were deregulated, the next thing you know, within a relatively short time, we went from those clunky old-fashioned phones to the smartphones we have today, only because of deregulation and competition. And now, for some reason, there's this notion arising that even though competition in the electric markets has worked well, prices have come down for consumers across the board, we have a resilient, reliable grid in Pennsylvania and beyond, that somehow the government needs to jump back in and start messing with it.
Well, and that and it's really, in a lot of ways, it's playing on ignorance. And I don't mean that in a rude way, but again, something else that longtime, you know, veteran observers will recall was that the midnight pay grab in 2005 unleashed a fury on the part of the voters and the taxpayers, and that a lot of legislators decided to retire rather than face the voters again. Many of those who did face the voters were not returned to office. And so in politics, it may feel like a long time ago, the stuff that happened back in the 90s. But yet, you know, we had a very expensive process of transition to competitive markets, during which the nuclear power industry was compensated for the value of their assets. They were allowed to surcharge the ratepayers $9 billion extra in total. And like, this was part of the deal. We'll compensate you for your assets, but we're going to reach this crossover point where, you know, once we arrive in this new world, that there's no going back. And so it's like, it just kind of, it annoys me that somehow we are supposed to pretend that the nukes didn't ask for this, lobby for it, and that they didn't receive and keep the money.
Right. I think that's absolutely true. And here we are at the point where Pennsylvania is a success story. We are one of the more successful states here with energy competition. So and that has brought our energy prices down, like you said. And I don't know why we would consider reversing that whole process at this point, where we've gotten to, like you said, the nuclear industry was reimbursed for the investment that they made in their facilities. And now we're at the point where we are at a full competitive marketplace, and it's been very successful.
Exelon, which owns Three Mile Island, which has been the power plant in dispute, Exelon has announced that in September they will begin the process of decommissioning. And, you know, certainly the local impact is going to be noticed. There's going to be, even though Exelon says that they have promised, they've offered new positions inside the company to the incumbent workforce at Three Mile Island. Not clear whether everybody's going to be able to, you know, to move or take up these new positions. But, you know, again, there are five nuclear facilities in Pennsylvania. Four of them, the four that have two reactors, are all profitable. And according to PJM Interconnect and their market monitor, that they're going to continue to be profitable in the coming years. It's only the single reactor facility, Three Mile Island, which is losing money.
And it's been crippled since 1979 because it was designed to be a two-unit operation.
Correct.
And it's only got the one because the other one had the near meltdown incident.
Yes, yes. And so this is a... this is a private business decision, and that decision, you know, apparently has been made. Economic reality has set in, and that all of these, you know, schemes to undermine the market, to bail out the nuclear industry, and to destroy competitive markets, that has been stopped.
It sounds like it's been stopped. Certainly, conversations I've had in the Capitol with some leaders on both sides of the building, both the Senate and House side, seem to indicate, it wasn't public statements, but statements that seem to indicate that the bailout plan is now, with the demise of Three Mile Island, that plan itself is dead. But we need to be remaining vigilant because, I mean, the folks that were pushing for this, they aren't going away. They'll be thinking of the next idea to get the government back involved in the market to benefit the industry that they care about.
Competitive markets work.
And the great thing about the market is that there's choice in the market. So if a particular consumer wants to purchase a particular kind of energy, they can still do that in the market. Whatever is of value to them can be purchased in the marketplace. And that's the beauty of the market, is that it creates supply and demand where it's most appropriately placed, instead of the government choosing winners and losers in the marketplace.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor, from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. So, you know, as we move into this next phase of the nuke bailout, I mean, Steve, I think you're exactly right. I think we're gonna see a shift now from the save these jobs argument with the one particular facility to some sort of environmental policy based argument to say, well, I love this, that the nukes, that they're green energy. I think that actually it kind of glows green, that we're supposed to pretend that because that the nuclear power plants don't emit carbon, that they don't in fact generate plutonium and uranium, which of course is again, there are trade-offs to everything. That's my whole point.
And ironically, the very thing that drove the electricity prices down in Pennsylvania, that made it difficult for an outmoded plant like Three Mile Island to make a profit in the market, is the emergence of natural gas, in particular Pennsylvania natural gas, which has not only lowered the price of electricity and increased the incredible resiliency of our electric grid, but it's also lowered the carbon emissions in Pennsylvania drastically.
That is correct.
And so if you're a person who counts raising or lowering carbon levels as your goal, natural gas has achieved incredible success in lowering the carbon emissions while lowering the prices and making the consumer have more access to a good product at a low price.
Right. And the other thing is that the coal-fired power plants, which are still responsible for about 21% of electricity in Pennsylvania, a couple of them are scheduled for closure over the coming years, too. So we know that they're going to be replaced by cleaner natural gas-fired energy resources. So in the case of TMI, which is responsible for about 1.8% of Pennsylvania's energy, if that gets replaced by natural gas, we will continue to see declines in carbon emissions. So on the whole, we're looking at an ongoing trend of carbon reduction because of the changeover to the natural gas and Pennsylvania natural gas, of course, which brings us jobs and economic development here in the state.
Yes, so. And actually I was amused to hear, I think, again, it was PJM Interconnect saying that if the nuclear generated electricity from Three Mile Island were to be replaced by electricity generated from Pennsylvania natural gas, that prices for consumers would actually go down.
Yeah, 9% to 24% over the next 3 years is what the testimony was.
So
that means a lot for the typical consumer, but think about the industrial consumer. Think about a manufacturer where the biggest cost they may have is their electric power that they need for their processes. It makes a tremendous difference that we're keeping the rates low in Pennsylvania through competition. So manufacturing can thrive here.
And this is, you know, and this is my passion. This is the mission of my organization. And that, you know, there are a lot of things that Pennsylvania does that we get in our own way, that we're an expensive place to do business. We have a state government that spends too much, and we have business taxes that are too high, and we've got, you know, a hostile labor climate and, you know, a significant regulatory burden. Like there are obstacles why people would not choose to locate here. But if we can manifest the opportunity from Pennsylvania's energy revolution, hammer down that baseline cost of providing the energy that's again, one of the main inputs for manufacturing, well, that becomes a real business reason for people to choose to locate and invest and expand and hire here as opposed to one of our competitor states. And of course, ultimately, in a free economy, these are all voluntary choices. You know, the state, yes, the Commonwealth cannot compel people to conduct business here, right? That we have to have a pro-growth, pro-production market so that people will say, you know what? I want to go to Pennsylvania because I think I can get a good return on investment there.
And just like we talked about competition amongst electric power generators, competition amongst the trucking industry, competition amongst the communications industry, our founder set up a system where we would have competition amongst the 50 states. Because we are able to have different laws and different policies in each state, we're in a constant competitive race to attract business and investment that otherwise may go to some other state. That's what also helps us to be able to enact and continue better policies. And this example of the nuclear bailout seemingly having failed as an example of how Pennsylvania can stay competitive, because it would have been damaging to drive up rates in that competitive the national environment and internationally as well.
Absolutely, yes. And the you guys have heard me joke many times that too many of our office holders, their attitude is that so long as that we're less bad than New York and New Jersey, that we're okay.
Right.
But as a matter of fact, that in both New York, New Jersey, and Illinois, that the nuclear industry got the bailout there. It's jacking up costs for consumers there, rendering businesses in those states even less competitive. And you see what's happened in Illinois, where the dysfunction in Springfield is so bad that the state of Illinois has had net population loss, that more than 250,000 people have moved out. And in fact, because of that Pennsylvania has gone from being the sixth most populous to the fifth most populous. It wasn't that we grew that much. It's that Illinois shrank to that degree.
Well, and it's like you said, Pennsylvania is not a shining example of, you know, taxes or regulations. And we talk about that all the time on the program. We just don't have a lot going for us in some of those areas. But energy is one of our strong points, for sure, because of being blessed with incredible natural gas resources and now having the opportunity to take advantage of those resources as we grow, you know, the infrastructure to use the gas much easier and much better, getting it to market. So this is really a strong point for Pennsylvania, and we cannot make decisions that ruin that for us. We can't shoot ourselves in the foot.
And the one statistic that I heard that really helped to put things in perspective, that in the Marcellus Shale natural gas play, it goes across five states. New York and Maryland have drilling moratoriums, so there's no energy being harvested there. So Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, those are the three active states in the Marcellus play. That there are two kinds of gas. There's the methane that comes out of the ground pure, and then there's the methane that comes out of the ground with a whole lot of other chemicals. They call the pure methane, they call it the dry gas, and then the methane with all the byproducts, they call it the wet gas. So Pennsylvania, of the three states, Pennsylvania has a quarter of the wet gas, but that Pennsylvania has two-thirds of the dry gas, two-thirds of the pure methane in one of the biggest natural gas plays in the world, certainly the biggest in the United States. And so what that means, that the pure methane is ready for what? It's ready for home heating and cooking. It's ready for industrial furnaces, and it's ready to go to electricity plants to generate
to the gas-fired power. Electrical generators, yes.
And this is why with our competitive market that we've seen over the last 2 years, we've seen 10 new natural gas-fired electricity generation facilities come online. And again, these are positive signs. This is proof positive that our competitive market is working because you've seen price benefits for consumers and that you've seen new entrants coming into the marketplace.
And with those new entrants comes a lot of new jobs, many, many more jobs than are being lost through the closure of TMI, for example. So it's a win for the Pennsylvania workforce, more opportunities as the doors open for innovative, competitive industries. And it's a win, of course, as we talked about before, for consumers as the prices drop.
Yeah. And the other great thing about competition is innovation. Like you just said, Steve, innovation comes about from a competitive market. And that's why we've seen such innovation in gas, the gas industry. And like you said, 10 gas-fired power plants coming online. I think we'd also like to see innovation in other areas of electric generation. I think there's innovation to be found in the electric generation area that if it's actually subsidized is not going to come about as quickly as it would otherwise, because we know that competition brings innovation. And that's true for all the electric sources, for green sources of energy. To the extent that they need to be more competitive in a marketplace, they'll bring about more innovation.
And that really, I mean, Rebecca, that is spot on. And that's very important, and people really don't consider that actually with the carve out for the wind and solar, right, that essentially they're being coddled, you know, and mm-hmm. that because they're being spared the full rigors of competition, it's actually delaying
yes.
the point in time at which breakthrough technologies would emerge. Because, you know, again, it's a real life test of a consumer saying, is this worth me spending my own money on it? And because we've subsidized this particular sector of energy production and mandated its use and all this, that actually it's not as effective as it might be, maybe even as it would be under full competition. Well, anyway, so as we said at the outset, vigilance remains our watchword as to the nuclear bailout. But it does seem with the playing taps for Three Mile Island that perhaps we are at least at the end of this particular phase of the bailout type nonsense. But anyway, please stay tuned. You know where to find us. And Steve, for the listeners, where can they go to learn more about you and your organization?
The best place to go is commonwealthfoundation.org. On the web.
Awesome. Rebecca, where do people go?
NFIB.com/PA or Facebook or Twitter.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org or Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from Rebecca and Steve and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The loudest voices of tolerance today have little tolerance for traditional Christian beliefs. So said Vice President Mike Pence recently while addressing the graduating class at Liberty University. If anything, the Vice President's remark was an understatement. The left doesn't just have little tolerance for traditional Christian beliefs, it is working hard to scrub the influence of Christianity from the public square. Now that their love affair with socialism has come out of the shadows, the left has launched an all-out campaign to place big government in control of all aspects of not just our economy, but of our lives. As with any totalitarian movement, it cannot establish government as the dominant force in society without eradicating the competing influence of religion. And so the left has ramped up its attacks on anything and everything Christian. Here in Penn's Woods, two such recent attacks have captured national attention. Both involve state representatives from Philadelphia, which really should change its slogan from the City of Brotherly Love to the City of Hateful Intolerance. The left's latest toxic stew of hatred began on the day Representative Movita Johnson-Harrell was sworn into office. Representative Johnson-Harrell, it seems, is the first woman of the Muslim faith to serve in the Pennsylvania General Assembly. That apparently made unacceptable the utterance of a Christian invocation to open the session. Representative Stephanie Borowitz, a freshman lawmaker herself, had long been scheduled to give the invocation that day and, true to her faith, delivered a standard Christian prayer. This sent the left into a fit of intolerance, the flames of which were fanned into a national controversy, with Representative Borowitz being denounced by all the usual suspects in the mainstream media. The day ended with Representative Johnson Harrell casting one final aspersion on the Christian religion by labeling the Borowitz invocation, quote, idiotic. Now we come to the antics of State Representative Brian Sims. He decided to video himself verbally harassing an anti-abortion protester outside of a Philadelphia abortion clinic. Sims, whom someone saw fit to elect to public office, unleashed a verbal tirade that went on for nearly 8 minutes. He called the woman, who continued to recite the rosary during the onslaught, quote, an old white woman. He labeled her presence shameful and disgusting. It was a premeditated ambush. Sims actually videoed his assault, posting it on social media, and asking the woman for her home address so those wishing to continue the practice of killing unborn children could protest in front of her home. To make matters worse, Sims then accosted a woman praying with her two teenage daughters and their friend outside of the abortion clinic. In the parlance of social media, he doxed them, asking viewers to identify the teen girls and find their home addresses. A full-grown, although obviously not mature man, asking for teen girls' home addresses is totally improper behavior and creepier than a Joe Biden hug. In both instances, imagine, if you will, what would have happened had the roles been reversed. What if a Christian legislator had termed a Muslim prayer idiotic? What if a pro-life lawmaker had verbally harassed, then stalked pro-abortion protesters? The left would have gone into a fit of indignant outrage. What has been their reaction? Crickets. Every left-wing Democrat from Governor Tom Wolf on down, who morally posture when it suits their political purposes, have either made watered-down statements or remained completely silent. Likewise, the reaction from the mainstream media has also been muted. At her humble home in Calcutta, Mother Teresa had a prayer posted on her wall. It may or may not have been written by her, but the prayer begins with the words, "People are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway." And it ends, "In the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them, anyway." The victims of Representative Sims and Johnson Harrell's hateful intolerance have taken the high road. All chose to offer prayers for those who had trespassed against them, rather than to respond in kind. They are living examples of Mother Teresa's prayer, because they know, in the final analysis, it was never between them and those who mistreated them. Anyway. With a Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WCNS-AM in Latrobe, WJSM-FM in Martinsburg, along with WJUN-AM in Mexico, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, philanthropic foundations, and corporations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.